From Scandinavia. I hope you're doing well and that you're having a good day today. Thank you for spending some of your time with us as we investigate, explore, and report on research, theories, and ideas. You can find us at redicecreations.com. We're also available on Stitcher and in the iTunes store. Today, Douglas Dietrich is on the program to talk about the 8 years he spent as a research librarian for the Department of Defense at El Presidio Real de San Francisco military base. There, along with his primary duty of document destruction, he was assigned to locate and access incredibly rare occult grimoires for whom Douglas claims is the official recognized satanic chaplain of the United States Army, Lieutenant Colonel Michael A. Aquino. Douglas will speak about occultism and Satanism within the U.S. military. He'll also share his evidence for child abuse, pornography, blackmail, and mind control in the military. This is quite a story, and as always, we'll leave it up to you to decide what to make of the material presented. Welcome to Red Eyes Radio, Douglas. Great to have you with us. Thank you for coming on. I know it's early in the morning over there, and you, just as I am an evening person, so I know sometimes it can be difficult to go up and, of course, talk about this very heavy research first thing in the morning. So we really appreciate you coming on, Douglas. Thank you for that.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad to be here with the listening audience of Red Eyes Creations Radio, and I am honored and privileged to be speaking to Henrik because I've heard so much about the service that you provide for the alternative information community.
Thank you, Douglas. Great. Now, you have a very interesting background as a Department of Defense research librarian, and you know, I've been following the rumors, I guess it is for me at this stage, that we've heard about for years now regarding the U.S. military and their use of occult warfare, involvement in Satanism, everything from Jack Parsons to the CIA's occult handbooks on magic called the Official CIA Manual of Trickery and Deception, to things like the First Earth Battalion, remote viewing, and the rumors of Colonel Michael Aquino. And, you know, when going through some of your material, Douglas, I mean, if your story is accurate, this is a verification and corroboration on many of these claims and stories, again, that we've only heard in passing about throughout the years. And quite a bit have been coming out, obviously, about the MKUltra program and Project Artichoke and Project Bluebird. But I think this is going to be really interesting, so I'm looking forward to very much talking more about this with you today, Douglas.
Absolutely, and I'll be happy to do so. As a matter of fact, to put this into perspective for you, if Satan has a home, it's San Francisco, where I not so much live as I'm stranded here. San Francisco is one of the most expensive cities in the world in which to live. It is literally surpassed in terms of expenses at various times, New York City or Tokyo or London in terms of its expense, and even Hawaii. So it's a very strange area. One of the reasons why it's so expensive is the lack of land. It's a very small peninsula, and it also has been compounded by the Silicon Valley boom of many years ago, where everyone just thought it was the most important thing in the world to be identified as having an office in San Francisco. And so the real estate went way up, and therefore it's a very strange kind of environment, and Colonel Aquino happens to be pretty much my neighbor. He's literally within walking distance, within a few blocks. I certainly did not know him growing up because I grew up in a very different part of the city. I grew up in the Tenderloin ghetto of San Francisco, and it's called Tenderloin because the policemen who cruised or patrolled the street streets of the Tenderloin Ghetto of San Francisco were paid hazard pay, and as a result, they could afford to eat tenderloin steak every night. And that's how dangerous that area was. But I grew up a military dependent, meaning that my father was a U.S. serviceman. As a matter of fact, I was born essentially a naturalized American citizen, but I was not born in the United States. I was born in the Republic of China as reestablished on the island of Taiwan, which is not recognized by the United Nations. The Nationalist Republic of China was one of the founding member states of the United Nations and therefore had a seat on the United Nations Security Council with the other major allies of the Second World War, France, Britain, the Soviet Union at the time, the United States, and the Nationalist Republic of China. Now, Communist China has taken that seat, whereas the Nationalist Republic of China, as exiled to the island of Taiwan, is not recognized among the 195 United Nations recognized nations of the world. But I was born there, the son of a U.S. serviceman, and therefore was a naturalized American citizen. However, unlike John McCain, who was born on a military base, I was not born on official United States territory. Therefore, unlike him, I could never run for president, which I'm sure everyone is thankful for. But at any rate, in terms of Colonel Michael Aquino, and it's pronounced two ways, it's either Aquino or Aquino, he was essentially born on the day of the Nuremberg hangings in 1946 or 47, and I believe it was October 16th of 1946. And he basically met Anton Zandor LaVey, the founder of the First Church of Satan, in the Boy Scouts of the United States, which is another organization which has a fairly wholesome image, but at times it breaks out that there's enormous scandals such as homosexual child predation within the Boy Scouts done by the Scoutmasters, and that other times less so, scandals will break out about the practice of Satanism within the Boy Scouts. But they were both outstanding scouts. Colonel Michael Aquino was the national commander of the Eagle Scouts, and Anton Zandor LaVey, the founder of the First Church of Satan, was a Eagle Scout. So at any rate, in 1968, Colonel Michael Aquino graduated from the Psychological Operations Department of the Special Warfare School, John F. Kennedy Special Warfare School at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. So he was a Special Forces officer, an officer of the Green Berets, as so glamorized by John Wayne. And in 1969, he officially converted, formally converted to the First Church of Satan, as organized by Anton Zandor LaVey. And this church had been established in 1966, the same year that I was born. And so after he had converted to that church, he was deployed to Vietnam. And in June of 1969, he started serving in with the 6th PSYOP Battalion, Psychological Operations Battalion, mm-hmm. in the 3rd Corps Tactical Zone of the Republic of South Vietnam, around the Saigon, General Saigon region. And that's where he made a name for himself in terms of the use of magic. Basically, one of the things that we had run into in the Vietnam War for the Americans was that they were experimenting with various types of psychological warfare. One of those types of psychological warfare was the use of helicopters over the forces of the Viet Cong, or elements of the North Vietnamese Army that were advising them. And one of the unusual techniques that they used to try and disorient these troops, because they couldn't find them all or locate them all or shoot them all, so they would try to reach huge blankets of them with psychological effect through sound. So they would have these stereo speaker systems that were in the helicopters that would play loud demonic screams to try and disorient or frighten the troops that were coming near bases. And this didn't work well at all, because the Vietnamese had developed a rule of thumb, a literal rule of thumb, where if they held their thumb up in the air and the helicopter was bigger than their thumb, they knew they could take it out with a rocket-propelled grenade because it was close enough to hit. And so they were taking down helicopters and their crews, and most importantly to the military of all, very expensive stereo equipment. And while they were knocking all of this down out of the sky and costing the U.S. Army thousands, if not millions of dollars worth of damage, they approached Colonel Michael Aquino and said, well, you're a Satanist and a black magician. And I should say that with a K, because they within that community, they're very stressful about this. Magic spelled with a K, as you probably already know, shows that it's true magic that affects the reality of the universe around it, as opposed to prestidigitation or sleight of hand or stage legerdemain. It's not just parlor tricks. Actual occult forces are manipulated. So they said to him, can you get these screams out of the sky for us without us risking so much men and materials? And he said he could do it. And so he channeled the Diabolicon. And he did this by going into a trance state and basically started in a trance state to write quatrains, or, as people who are familiar with Nostradamus would understand this, poetic prose statements. And he basically channeled no less than 8 demonic entities: Satan, Beelzebub, Azazel, Abaddon, Asmodeus, Astaroth, Belial, and Leviathan. And he basically wrote a tome of occult work almost out of thin air, and was able, through this work, to call screams out of thin air. Now, I was ordered, as with so many materials, to destroy documentation of this, and not because it was in any way, shape, or form incriminating. In terms of Michael Aquino's case, he probably just didn't want records of it around and had a tremendous sway over what stayed around and what didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, I need to emphasize that so many of the documents I destroyed for the Department of Defense were destroyed not to hide information from the media or from academia out of any sense of conspiracy, but quite simply just to make room. The Department of Defense, after a while, didn't even care what it had. They had literally tons of documentation that they were just trying to get rid of to make space. And in those days, what was gotten rid of potentially was lost forever. And indeed, generally, that was the case. And oftentimes, this was to their benefit. So this is the kind of mentality that we were contending with. But in the case of this, and we can go into that in some more detail in a few minutes, but in the case of Colonel Michael Aquino specifically, using the Diabolicon as a focus, he was able to call out demonic screams that were so powerful that the visual effect that I saw on footage of this was as if the sound was sourcing from everywhere. It was like a wall of sound. Viet Cong at that point in history were literally knocked off their feet. And this was so disorienting, so threatening to the Viet Cong and North Vietnamese high command, that they ultimately targeted the Diabolicon as a military target. And it was at one point almost totally destroyed by enemy fire. He had to rechannel it. And at that time, he was probably left with about 2 handwritten copies. Now, those were both in storage at the Presidio Military Base Library where I worked. And to show you how seriously the atheistic communist enemy took this instrument of occultism, they were both heavily damaged by enemy fire, one of them literally had bullet holes in it. So this is the level of seriousness with which it was taken. But the end result of this was that Colonel Michael Aquino, more importantly than his effect in the field against the Vietnamese who were fighting against the Americans, he proved to the American military that the occult was cost-effective. And because of that, he was officially recognized as the Satanic Chaplain of the United States Army. And the United States Army was the first military in the world to have an officially recognized United States officially recognized Satanic Chaplaincy. And as a matter of fact, in his retirement, many generals, many high-ranking officers are consulted for they're contracted for consultation in retirement, so they never truly retire because their security clearances are so high they can't afford to retire them. And a good example of that would be that if you're in the military for many years, The top secret security clearance is the absolute rock bottom of security clearance levels. Mm-hmm. Pretty much everyone's given that just to, like, work in restricted areas of bases. You start getting numeric and alphabetical classifications that bring you up into higher and higher levels of classification until you get to ranks of classification like crypto top secret, cosmic top secret, and in the case of the U.S. president, it used to be required that they have a military experience. It was an unspoken rule because they were commander-in-chief of all military forces. That's no longer the case, and as a result, most presidents have functionally no security clearance. So you're talking about a commander-in-chief of all the armed forces who has a security clearance, which is given to him basically as an honorarium as a president, mm-hmm. where he's got maybe like a top-secret security clearance, and he's got generals and even high-ranking officers who are at the colonel status or major type of status, and they basically have security clearances that are light years above that of their commander-in-chief, and that's the way they like it, because they can manipulate him. He's in a box. He has no idea what's going on.
That means, Douglas, that the president doesn't have any power. He isn't in the know, correct?
That is absolutely correct. And, to give you one example of this, the nuclear codes for many, many years were because the American Strategic Air Command that was in charge of the nuclear codes was so lazy, so corrupt, like all of the military is, like any other part of the U.S. government is. I mean, to put this into perspective for you, once you get a job for the government, the United States government, it's worse than in the Soviet Union in the sense that the Soviet Union was a monstrous amalgam of corrupt bureaucratic apparatchiks, party hacks, and incompetents who ran the Soviet Union to the ground. The U.S. military, being part of the U.S. government, and the U.S. government itself are no different. Once you get a job with the U.S. government, you can never be fired. Ever. No matter what you do, you can never be fired. I would see this every day while I was working for the government. And I've worked for the government in the United States at the federal level, at the state level, and I've worked with it at the municipal level. And at every level, once you get a job with any of those governmental levels, but particularly federal, you can never be fired. I mean, you can literally not show up to work for weeks, just show up after being missing for about 14, 15 days, just clock in, and nobody will care. You can go to work, you can go to sleep, and nobody cares. You can go to work pig-faced drunk, and nobody cares. I mean, they spend all day partying. And that's all they do. And these people who have a fantasy that there's all these security cameras all around the U.S. government facilities is living in a dream world. It's just projected by movies so that people get the delusion that the U.S. government works. The reality is no one's doing anything. And that's why, like the Soviet Union, the United States is in the middle of collapse. And to give you a good example of that was the nuclear codes. Basically, around the 1960s, they just decided that they never wanted to work to remember or change or continually revamp the nuclear codes. So for decades, they were all just eight zeros. It was just zero, 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 all eight in a row. And that was all it was. And the man who ran the Department of Defense, McNamara, had no idea of this. And he had no idea anyone had authorized that. And he didn't find out about it until 2004. This was years after he retired. If you remember McNamara, he was in charge of the DOD back during the age of the Vietnam War.
Yep.
And so he was finally told in 2004, hey, did you know the nuclear codes were all just eight zeros? And he had no idea of that. And that is essentially what the U.S. government is like. I mean, it's so bad that and this has literally happened. It happens fairly frequently. You could go totally postal, violent, start killing all of your fellow workers. They'll send in a SWAT team or a tactical team of police to take you down. They'll kill you, but you'll die employed. You'll never be fired. That's how bad it is. I mean, that's literally what we're talking about. And so to give you an example again of how this is, San Francisco, I bring it up because it's so incestuous, and this has to peripherally connect with Colonel Aquino. One of the biggest problems that we ran into in the U.S. military was child molestation. You're dealing with a very cult-like environment. I was in the Marine Corps for a very short period of time, less than 2 years. I was dishonorably discharged from the United States Marine Corps. And the point is that one of the first things you notice, particularly in the Marine Corps, which, believe it or not, in its own way, in a general sense, is cleaner than the rest of the armed forces, or a little less corrupt in certain senses. But at any rate, it is still a branch of service that has its own form of corruption. But the point is that once you're in it, you realize that you've entered a cult without the redemption of a faith. They break you down, they rebuild you up in their image, and there is no, faith or some kind of cosmology that gives you any sense of meaning or purpose within that cult.
Mm-hmm.
The cult simply exists for the sake of perpetuating the cult. Well, with a sense of that emptiness in the Marine Corps, that's almost a blessing. With the Army, that cult that developed was Satanism. And to put it into perspective for you, the amount of people in the United States military, and this is very hard to believe for most people in the rest of the world because America runs the world's first global empire. Basically, out of the 195 recognized nation states that are recognized by the United Nations, America has troops in or occupies the majority of them. So there's not a single nation in the world that hardly has that doesn't have Americans who are not just at embassies, but actually acting in a military advisory status. So with that much of a presence the world over, people would think the American military must be huge. But if you take all of the armed services, all of the reserves, all of the National Guard, and the entire Department of Defense, which is civilian, which is about 100,000 people, and you put them all together, they're less than 1% of the American population. America's population is the third largest in the world. First comes China and India, pretty much neck and neck with 1 billion people each. Then comes the United States with 300 people that are legally recognized and 50 million illegal immigrants. So we've got 350 million people here.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take the amount of people that are in the military, which plus Department of Defense, which is about 2.5 million people, that's less than 1%. Of the American population.
Yeah.
And that's how small it is. And in that smaller community, you develop a very isolated, very occult perspective because they become weary of outsiders. They have a top secret oriented mentation, and they hide everything from outsiders. And this is how they get over 51% of the annual discretionary fiscal income. Over 50%, literally on any given year, about 51% of our discretionary income in the United States goes to the military.
That's right. Yeah, we've published an article about this on the website, and I pointed it out many times during the program. It's just incredible when you think about it. So about 1% then receives above that 50% of the annual income there. That's just incredible. Now, was there a switch happened here somewhere along the line, Douglas, that where the Army, the Marine Corps and all this began to turn over into Satanism, or has it been there since day one, or has someone organized this and make this shift happen? Because we've published articles on the website that detail, for instance, that there have been passages from the Bible on the weaponry and on the ammunition and things like this, kind of weird things that you wonder what the hell is going on here. And then you think, is this a Christian cult of sorts then? I mean, they're coming with their passages. There's a lot of churches, I've heard anyway, set up within the military, and some people are very, very religious, and they think that they're sent to Iraq by, you know, God to sort things out and all this. That's the rumors we hear on the surface anyway, but obviously what you're sharing is the underpinnings of this, the underworld of this. But tell us about if there was a switch, as far as you know, happened here somewhere along the line, Douglas.
Well, in a sense there was, but in a sense there wasn't. The reality is this kind of dichotomy has existed for quite some time. The original founding fathers of the United States, the men who created the Constitutional Republic known as the United States, basically were deistic. They were Freemasons, and the Masonic lodges at that time had a lot more power than they do today. At that time, the men who were in Masonic lodges weren't just middle-class men who were seeking companionship. This was actually a time when these were propertied men, these were slave owners, these were extremely wealthy men. And the perspective was based on Newtonian mechanics of our universe. They felt that ours was a clockwork universe. Deism was essentially the perspective or the cosmology of a god gone away, that God had created a clockwork mechanism of the universe and then abandoned it, which left it up to enlightened men, illuminated men like themselves to lead. Yeah. That's how the founding fathers thought. So you have this already deistic perspective, which is very strange because the original people to colonize the United States, North America, hundreds of years before the Constitutional Republic existed, known as the United States, were Puritans. And they were religious fanatics who were so crazed and fundamentalist and ecstatic in their religious experiences that Cromwell, who killed his own king, he committed regicide to establish a theocracy over the British Isles, even he couldn't stand them. So he sent them across the Atlantic, and that's where you get that fundamentalist puritanical streak in the American military. That may be what is being catered to by the biblical passages on the guns, but it also is probably, from what I understand, to be an inversion ceremonial act. In other words, taking the act from the passage of the Bible and actually desecrating it by placing it on a weapon is a very satanic thing to do, depending on who does it.
Exactly. Well, that's a very good point, Douglas. I just want to clarify this because I brought up the article now. It's actually Treji Khan that are making the scopes, basically, you know, that you look through to aim. And it says here, at the end of the serial number on Treji Khan's ACO G gun sight, you can read JN 8, chapter 12, or colon 12, a reference to the New Testament book of John, chapter 8, verse 12, which reads, "Then spake Jesus again unto them, saying, I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life." And I have some images of that on the site when they've zoomed in on the scope there, basically, on the site. And it's pretty pretty interesting stuff, you know, what the hell is this?
No, it's fascinating in its own sense. I mean, having grown up being exposed to this, it's nothing is surprising at all.
Right,
I mean,
right.
To put this into perspective for you so you understand the true horror of it, and in a sense, we've gotten onto nuances. When we talk about the Founding Fathers, everybody zones out. That's like a sleeper, really, because the Americans make superheroes out of these individuals. And at the same time, the Americans really don't know that much about them. And so going from beyond them, basically, when the military took over the United States was only 100 years later after the establishment of the American Republic. It was in 1876. And what had happened was the American Civil War had just ended. The American Civil War was a railroad war. Every major battle in the American Civil War took place within 20 miles of track.
Mm-hmm.
And the end result was that the rail barons began to run what was essentially became the American military industrial complex. And there was a man who won the presidency of the United States known as Samuel Tilden. And Samuel Tilden had won the United States by the popular vote, by millions of votes. And he had also won the presidency by the electoral vote, which is, if people understand the nuances of American domestic politics, America is a frontier nation and therefore had very sparsely populated frontier states. And in order to give them electoral representation, they were given what was known as an electoral vote. So even though they had far fewer people, to prevent them from seceding from the Union because they weren't getting proper representation while being taxed, they were given this electoral vote so that they would have a greater sway. Well, what happened was when Samuel Tilden won both of those votes, a lot of violence and bribery went into effect from the robber barons. This was all admitted to later on by the people in charge of the vote counting who took those bribes when they weren't given appointed positions that they had been promised, but by then it was too late. They managed to steal enough electoral votes to win the presidency for General Rutherford B. Hayes. And General Rutherford B. Hayes was a front man, a president-select, as opposed to a president-elect, for the rail barons. And he won by one single electoral vote, not the popular vote, but one single electoral vote after they stole the swing votes of Florida and Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And since that point in history, every president has been a president select of the military industrial complex. He was the first, and his first action was, of course, to order expansion westward to kill all of the Indians so that they could establish a rail system that ran all the way from the East Coast to the Pacific. And because of that, the United States Frontier Army wound up engaging for the next 30 years in no less than one Indian battle slash massacre every single week of the year. That's the type of records that I was dealing with. And the end result was a genocide of literally about 100,000 American Indians all the way to the Pacific. And that was just the beginning of the military-industrial complex, and after that, it could not stop. It was on a rail, so to speak, where they had to have constant warfare in order to keep the expansion of the complex going. But that brings us back to the question, exactly how is it that less than 1%, you used the term 1%, it's far less than 1%. As a matter of fact, if you add in the 350 million people, then you divide it by that 2.5 million, you get something like you get a 0 point and then several zeros, sometimes up to 7 zeros before that one. So you get far less than 1% of the population gets well over or gets at least a little over half of all of the income in the United States every year. Now, the way they do this is because they have the politicians totally corrupted and totally blackmailed. They don't count on bribery because that would waste a lot of the money that they get. They count on basically getting the politicians involved with pedophilia. And when they get the politicians involved with pedophilia, the politicians that win are those that they have corrupted with pedophilia in the first place. That is where all the mind control programs come in, like MKUltra, like Artichoke. This is where you get severely damaged people who come out of the woodwork who have said that they have been part of all of these mind control programs, and their stories are so outrageous. Nobody believes them, and that's how the U.S. military continually gets away with it. This super victimization, these super victims fall into what is generically given the nomenclature or the nickname of super soldier program, so that people are totally confused. They think bigger and badder. They think of hulking, steroid type of football players. Not the case at all. It's the most frail and victimized of orphans. I will put this into perspective for you. At the Presidio Military Base, where I worked as a Department of Defense research librarian for almost a decade, I was there for about 6-7 years. Then I went to the Marine Corps for less than 2 years. Came back and worked for about 1.5 years, and left in 1992 when they closed the library down.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I was there literally until the Presidio Military Base Library closed down. Then they closed the entire base in 1995 because the scandals of child molestation were so enormous, amongst other scandals. Now, what had happened was my high school teacher, by the way, this is all in on record and is accessible for anyone to research, though it is fairly difficult to find because all of this happened before DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, truly formally released the Internet. So in those days, we had DARPANET and we had DeltaNet, which was part of the U.S. Army. And DeltaNet was notorious, I can get into that in a few moments, was notorious for carrying child molestation. And that was supposed to be the U.S. Army's specific electronic information dissemination network.
Mm-hmm.
And but in terms of why all of the child predation goes into part of that whole program for creating a cult-like environment of people who are totally unemployable and fit to do nothing else other than either go to jail or work in the military. And that's a big problem with the military. Where do we get the Satanism? A lot of the military is a lot like a prison system. Now, America's prison population, I'm sure most Europeans are familiar with this, America's prison population is all out of proportion to its baseline population. It has, in proportion to its population, the largest prison population in the world. And it has its own gulag archipelago, and the reason why is that it's a very diverse culture in terms of its economics. It's both a first world nation for the wealthy and a third world nation for the poor. Now, many people, rather than going to prison, go into the military. And so the same type of environment develops. In a prison, you have people who are members of ethnic gangs to protect themselves.
Right.
Part of the white Aryan supremacists the black nationalists who are usually Muslim, or the Latin American Cholo, or La Raza, the revanchists, and they all fight each other on ethnic level. The U.S. military, during the time that I was in there, was exactly like that. You're just in a prison in uniform. That's why they wouldn't allow us to train with real ammunition. If you ever see U.S. soldiers training, they spend millions of dollars training with laser harnesses. And they train with laser harnesses so they can play laser tag, because they know that if they give them real ammunition, they'll start killing each other. And what do you see in a prison riot? In a prison riot, they never kill the warden, and they never kill the guards. They kill each other. They need the warden and they need the guards as hostages. But they go after each other because of their ethnic and gang rivalries. That's what happens in the military. I was in Operation Desert Storm. Operation Desert Storm, there was about 20 Marines that were killed at the Battle of Al-Kafia, where the Iraqis managed to fight back and strike back with a spoiler attack. There was about nine soldiers that were killed behind the lines in a barracks. One of them was a woman that were killed by a stray Scud missile. Other than that, every single person that died on site in theater in Operation Desert Storm, which was about 350 people, close to about 400 or 500 people at the most, every single one of them was killed by another American. Every single one of them was killed by another American. Once they gave us the guns, all the Americans started to do was kill each other. The only thing that made Operation Desert Storm work was all the bombardment from the planes and the ships. If it weren't for that, nothing would have gotten done.
So it's out of control. And you're saying there no one trying to clean this up or get this in order properly, or maybe they just can't. It's out of control.
Oh, it's totally out of control. There's no way it could have gotten better. I can't imagine it could have gotten better. Nobody's lining up to join the military. These are men who would otherwise be homeless or in prison in general. You get certain exceptions to the rule. Patrick Tillman was an example. He was this wholesome, clean-cut, golden boy who was a football player who gave up a multi-million dollar contract after 9/11, so he could fight. He went into the U.S. Army Rangers. He didn't know what he was getting into. He was surrounded by a bunch of, in general, I would have to say this, I dealt with U.S. Army Rangers on the Presidio military base who were hardcore, multiple prison sentence child molesters. And to give you an example of this, do you remember the movie Black Hawk Down?
Actually, I've never seen the whole movie. I've faced out for some reason, but tell us about the story here, Douglas.
Yeah, well, the hero of Black Hawk Down, they gave him the name Danny Grimes in the film. It's based on a true story. That character, Danny Grimes, is based on a real man. He was a U.S. Army Ranger named John Stebbins, and his nickname was Stebby. Now, Stebby Stebbins was a convicted child molester. He spent in the rest of his life at Fort Leavenworth Military Prison for basically raping children under 12, keeping them chained in his basement, and feed them dog food out of dog bowls. And this guy was turned in by his own wife, and the point is that this is the kind of man that Patrick Tillman had behind his back. He wound up getting fragged behind his back because of men like this that he was working with. This is the kind of people who are in the special forces. You can imagine what the plain ones are like in the regular services. And also in the Marine Corps, which I was a part of, one of the reasons why the United Nations can't get child soldiers outlawed, they tried to make an international law to outlaw child soldiers. Well, in the United States, you're a child until you're age 18. Well, the United States Marine Corps accepts people who are 16 or 17 years old. So if child soldiers were to be outlawed, the Marine Corps would be left without anybody, because the overwhelming majority of people who join the Marine Corps are only 16 or 17 years old, because they're the only people naive enough to join. So the end result is the Marine Corps would be left without a good deal of its manpower were child soldiers to be outlawed by the United Nations. So the Marine Corps of the United States lobbies constantly that the United Nations be unable to outlaw child soldiers. So when I was in there, shortly after Desert Storm, when I got out, there was an enormous scandal in the United States Marine Corps about homosexual pornography being made at the San Diego Marine Corps Recruit Depot. That's where I had trained. There's only two places to train Marines, Parris Island in the East Coast and San Diego, where they call us Hollywood Marines. Well, they were making a bunch of porno movies in the Hollywood Marine Corps Recruit Training Depot, and then they covered it all up. It went out there for a short while. People heard it on television. The Marine Corps went into action, covered it all up, bought up as many of the porno tapes as they could, and destroyed them. But in terms of this is the kind of environment that we're talking about, well, what happens in prisons? Aside from all the homosexual sex and homosexual rape, you get Satanism. People in prison try to psychologically dominate each other. That's why they have the satanic tattoos, the 666 and a clover leaf. That's why they pursue Santeria, various forms of voodoo, and then they do whatever they can to psychologically and occult-wise dominate each other. That's where the Satanism comes in. It's a prison environment. And in that prison environment, you get the same thing that you always get in prisons, homosexual child predation. And they use that by which to control politicians, and it's those politicians that they manipulate that make it to the top, because those politicians are the most blackmailed, the most funded, and those politicians wind up consistently lobbying to give the military more and more money.
Yeah.
And here's a good example of it. The Child Daycare Center, the Presidio Military Base. Now, at the Child Daycare Center, the Presidio Military Base, and I emphasize this for anyone who has this fantasy that there's cameras in U.S. government buildings that are watching every move you make. Any cameras in a U.S. government building are pointed outside towards you. They're not pointed inside, because what a government building is like Las Vegas. What happens in Las Vegas stays in Las Vegas. What happens in a government building stays in a government building. No one polices the police. Who polices the police?
Yeah,
nobody.
Yeah.
And in terms of these government buildings, Child Daycare Center. 1980s, when I worked at the Presidio Military Base, the U.S. Army alone took care in terms of their daycare centers all over the world, in Panama, in West Germany, in the Philippines, Subic Bay was still open, in Okinawa, in South Korea. They had military bases all over the world, families working all over the world, and they all needed daycare centers. The U.S. Army in the 1980s took care, through its daycare centers, of 100,000 children a day.
Oh, wow.
100,000 children a day. Mm-hmm. Now, the Presidio Child Daycare Center was one of the largest. The Presidio Military Base is 1,500 acres. It's about 1,500 acres. It takes up a good deal of the city of San Francisco. And they had a child daycare center that could take care of 500,000 children. That's a lot of kids. And all of those kids started coming home with chlamydia, with gonorrhea, with syphilis, and basically any kind of venereal disease or sexually transmitted disease you can imagine. Worst of all, they were coming home with AIDS. Well, my high school teacher, Gary Willard Hambright, was an ordained Southern Baptist minister without a pulpit, and he lived in a church because he was essentially homeless. Well, he was my teacher at high school. I majored in graphic illustration, commercial art at John O'Connell Vocational Institute, the vocational equivalent of a high school in San Francisco. He ran the Presidio Daycare Center. He was ultimately convicted. He was federally indicted by a federal grand jury for assaulting no less than 14 children sexually, all of them under 4 years old. And he would have been indicted for assaulting hundreds of children if he himself hadn't died of AIDS before they could get around to it.
Hmm.
And he is calculated with probably having infected 500,000 children with AIDS. Not because he had sex with every single one in the daycare center, but because he had sex with many of them over many years. See, these families get transferred. They get rotated. So that one daycare center that can hold 500,000 people, basically winds up getting circulated, so you've got thousands and thousands going there over a period of years. Some families only stay there for a few months. And during that period of time, he was raping many of them. Now, I got him arrested because he kept his child pornography at the school. He was homeless. He couldn't keep it at the church. He kept it at the school because it was a commercial art class, so he said all these pictures of naked children were art references. Now, he couldn't be arrested on the U.S. military base. They said, oh, they protected him. And they said, oh, he's our best employee. They protected him. Finally, I got him arrested by having the pointing out the fact that the pornography was in the San Francisco Unified School District property. In other words, the San Francisco Police Department could finally arrest him. They had to wait until, in other words, see, the military police wouldn't arrest him. And when he was on federal property, the FBI wouldn't arrest him. None of these federal agencies would touch him. Suddenly, the guy gets out of that federal area. I'm able to get him arrested in a municipal area for keeping his child pornography in a San Francisco Unified School District area so the San Francisco Police Department could arrest him. See, the feds wouldn't arrest him. Here's another example. That ranger I told you about, the so-called hero of Black Hawk Down, Stebby Stebbins. He's in Fort Leavenworth military prison. Why is that important? Because everybody says, hey, this ranger was raping all these kids when he was retired. It was after he was out of the service. And I'm saying, look, if he was out of the service, if he was even a mercenary on contract with the U.S. government for plausible deniability, like Blackwater,
he
wouldn't be in a military prison. He'd be in a civilian prison along with all the other baby-raping SOBs.
Right.
He's in a military prison means he's under military control. That meant he was raping all those children under orders. There's no other way he would be in a military prison. He had to be under military control. They wouldn't take him otherwise.
Oh, that's absolutely great. Have you, by the way, as we talk about this, have you heard anything from Kay Griggs, the tapes she's released online, Douglas?
I have not, and to be quite honest with you, the name doesn't even ring a bell.
Wow.
Keep in mind that there are many victims of this sort of phenomena. If you explain her situation to me in a general sense, I might be able to address it, but probably not. The fact is that I'll give you an example. Lorianne Fenton, my executrix, who was kind enough to arrange with your staff this interview, she arranged the world's first super soldier summit in which she tried to put together a lot of these victims of mind control, MK Ultra, Project Artichoke, various super soldiers who were pimped out by the military as children or trained to be assassins. And there's a whole reason for that. To put this into perspective for you, these children are inducted into the military system without ever being on the military payroll. They're taken from foster homes. They're taken from orphanages. The U.S. Army Ranger, who I was personally had to work with for many years, it all started off with Logland. You can look up the Logland, L-O-G-L-A-N. Logical language is what it's an acronym for. And it was developed by a doctor known as Encyclopedia Brown. And his last name was Dr. Brown. You can look up his name by looking up the board game that was produced, I believe it was by Parker Brothers, called Careers. Do you remember a board game known as Careers?
Have not played that, actually, no.
It was around for many, many years. It was a very popular game. It might have been Milton Bradley. He designed that board game. And Dr. Brown, whose first name is escaping me at the moment, but it's easy enough. If you look up Logland and you look up the game Careers and you look up which Dr. Brown that is, that's the same Dr. Brown. He was employed by the U.S. military to design a synthetic language that would incorporate the 8 most spoken languages of the world at that time. And this way, they were trying to get rid of all of the baggage of all of those languages and keep only what was in common between those languages so that they could have a perfect military language that was very streamlined to use amongst international allies. They were trying to find one that was had far less nuances to it than any of the other languages, a very Spartan language. And so this one ranger I was forced to work with was sent to his home to help him develop this language by learning it from him and then field testing it by using a radio to other rangers or special forces in the field of operations from the professor's home. Well, the professor came home one day to find this ranger raping his kids. And so the U.S. military shut the whole project down because the professor wouldn't cooperate anymore. Professor Brown wound up building and designing his own catamaran, sailing all around the world trying to use Logland as a language of peace to try and undo what damage he had done by service to the U.S. military. He wound up dying, in an Argentine port hospital. He basically started dying at sea. They brought him into an Argentine port hospital where he died. I think that was around the year 2000. So that's the kind of sad story and tragedy that we're dealing with. Well, I was working on that Logland thing with him and this U.S. Army Ranger back in the 1980s, the mid-80s, and he was doing this out of the University of San Diego near the Marine Corps Recruit Training Depot where I went to train in the Marine Corps. And when I looked up, I called the linguistics department later at the University of San Diego and asked them about information on Dr. Brown. I was trying to catch up when I started exposing myself and talking about this sort of subject. I was investigating this, and you know what? The University of San Diego claimed he was never there.
Hmm.
They claimed he was never there, okay. And yet you can look it up and you can find out that he was there. So this is the kind of backtracking that we're talking about. But in terms of when Lorianne Fenton was organizing the Super Soldier Summit, one of the first things she did was she prevented me from talking with any of them or meeting any of them until the summit itself, because I had been working with the Chief Predator, Colonel Aquino, for almost a decade. They knew me. They knew my name. They'd heard of me because many of them had met Aquino. Aquino had international security clearances. He was on second mint to NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization.
Mm-hmm.
He was a member of the World Affairs Council. He had security clearances that allowed him to access security issues in the United Kingdom. So many of the super soldier victims who had been under his auspice, where he had monitored these programs or administered them, were British. And there is this tremendous phenomena within that type of programming where they have them switch from an American accent to a British accent during their various altered personalities. And as you might know, for the general public who might be there, if this is their first exposure to this sort of thing, which anyone who listens to Red Eyes Creations Radio would surprise me, I would suppose many people would be already familiar with this.
I believe so.
But
as well.
What happens in these programs is they traumatize these children. They adopt them, as I said, from these various environments where they have no family to fall back on or who will investigate their disappearance. And they basically break them down by having them adopt animals from pet stores, bring these kittens or puppies home, usually alternate between kittens and puppies to represent males and females, all dogs are boys, all cats are girls. They have them in this programming. And then they have them raise these animals, nurture them, and then under pain of torture, they make them kill them.
Yeah.
And that's the first break in the personality, the first split in the psyche. Then they have them do that with other childhood friends, learn to take a affinity for them, and then kill them. They develop a love, bond, kill programming. And these kind of bond-kill assassins ultimately are split into so many personalities. The advantage for the U.S. military is that if they're arrested by the local constabulary or police department, no matter what interrogation they go through, they can't remember what they did because it was a different personality that did it. They can have up to 20 different personalities, sometimes more, sometimes less. And if they're arrested by foreign or even domestic inter-service rivalry that goes on, a different department, Navy versus Army, Air Force versus Marine, something like that, they get arrested by or somehow captured by one of those different rival military services. Nothing can be found out unless someone knows the key to break open or unlock the one persona or personality that committed the crime. Or foreign intelligence agencies can't break them either unless you know the code phrases to get the right memory. These personalities aren't even on the same timeline. These personalities are often in different timelines. And some of them are at different maturity levels. One will be a child, whereas other will be a semi-adult.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they pair them up with politicians, and basically the politicians will become compromised. And then not only has the politician become compromised, but by the time the politician is intimate with this individual, the individual has scoped out their estate, their apartment, their condominium, wherever they're living, in the countryside or in the city, enough through their intimate encounters to finish this politician off if the politician suddenly goes rogue,
yeah.
Suddenly has a change of heart, suddenly develops a conscience. They can kill him because that's what they've been trained to do. And by that time, they're familiar with his environment. Then what happens? Then the military can approach the family and say, well, your father or your husband has just been killed by a queer whore, is the term that they use. That was the term they often used in the military. Just been killed by a queer whore, and we've got all this photographic evidence of it, and if you report this or you don't do as we say, you don't grow up to become a politician to take his place and lobby for all this money we need, then we're going to turn this loose about your family, and your family will never be able to do any politics again.
Yeah,
that's how the U.S. military, less than 1% of the population, continues to get over 50% of the income. Now, to put this in a perspective for you, like I said, those children at the daycare center were basically coming in with all sorts of diseases. Now, my high school teacher, Gary Hambright, even a scumbag like him couldn't have AIDS combined with chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, and everything else you can imagine, and still remain ambulatory. There had to be several other people involved. And again, where were all the cameras? Just to emphasize this to the public who has this fantasy from Mission Impossible that we've got cameras watching us every minute.
Mm-hmm.
There's no cameras inside of these daycare centers, and what could be a much more, what could be more valuable than the future of your children? and there's no cameras there. They don't want people to see them while they're raping all these kids. And this was going on for years. Full government protection. As a matter of fact, the records for the child daycare center at the Presidio Military Base were kept at the community center. And the community center burned down in a fire in the 1980s that took away all evidence, burned all the evidence of what happened to these children.
Hmm.
And the families were so enraged, they all got together and they burned the daycare center to the ground. And all of this happened within a very short period of time. Now, the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, the same people who were responsible for killing everybody at Waco, were sent to investigate the fire at the community center, and they concluded it was arson. And the United States military claimed jurisdiction and said, well, you're a federal agency, we're a federal agency, and you're on our base, and we say it's not arson. And it was as simple as that. And to give you an example of this, there were millions of veterans injured in all of America's wars, from the Spanish-American War through the fall of Saigon in 1975. All of those records were taken, and they were put into the National Record Center in St. Louis, Missouri. And the local municipal fire department in 1975 protested because the U.S. government refused to install fire alarms or sprinkler systems. But because it was federal property, there was nothing the fire department could do about it. Now, the department that ran that facility was the General Services Administration. They run the federal archives. They had a regional office right here in San Bruno, California. Now, in the course of my primary career as a civilian military librarian, I was able to review the in-house Federal Archives Agency training reel before I was ordered to destroy it, and exposed the fact that there were no less than 15 starting points of inception which instigated a fire which took down that facility. And what they did by destroying all these documents of millions of veterans was they saved the government billions and billions, if not trillions of dollars, in veterans' benefits.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to pay anybody.
Okay.
And just as an aside, Lee Harvey Oswald's records were in there. James Earl Ray's records were in there. My father's records were in there. Everybody's records were in there. Any VA bureaucrat will tell you that they will deal with the repercussions of that arson until the last Vietnam vet drops dying. So if they're willing to do that, you can imagine what they're doing to anything. And I spent a career destroying documents in an incinerator. So all of America's history is destroyed. This is why, like the Soviet Union, it has no future. One of the reasons the Soviet Union collapsed was because they kept destroying all evidence of everything they did, and they kept fabricating new records. A more clumsy example of this would be the Encyclopedia Sovietica, where they had a entry on Beria of the KGB.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was taken out of power and fell out of favor, they took him out of that encyclopedia. This was in the days before computer. All they had was print.
Right.
And because they had a set number of pages in the Encyclopedia Sovietica, they had to expand their definition of the Bering Strait, which had come before Beria, to an extra 10 pages. See, this was how they used to redeploy their history, and they wound up collapsing because of it, because in the end they had no history. The United States is going through that same matrix of unreality. They don't live in the real world. And because of that, they lose every war they fight because they're naive enough to believe they won the wars they were told they won. They honestly believe that. If you ever listen to General Petraeus, who now runs the CIA,
mm-hmm. yeah.
he wrote a dissertation at his military academy, which earned him a promotion, and he basically in that dissertation talked about how the United States won the Vietnam War.
Huh.
This is the okay. kind of insanity that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And these are the kind of men that I was dealing with all of my life. And so when I'm in these facilities, one of the first things I noticed was because all these men spend time overseas, one of the first things they do is many of them take advantage of child prostitution. And I grew up thinking that there was something wrong with me because I had no taste for children. And everyone around me did. It was only when I was probably around 25 years old, we're talking about a quarter of a century old, when I was out of the Marine Corps, that was before the Marine Corps, when I was considering entering the Marine Corps at that time and then decided against it at that time, then I went in later anyway because I needed experience. When I realized I could no longer work for the U.S. government, I wanted to make big money, and I realized I could do so as a mercenary. I knew I needed the training. I had to get it, and the only really good place to get it was a place like the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
But during that period of time, till I was going through these various decisions, I thought there was something wrong with me, and it was only later around that time I realized it wasn't me, it was them.
Right.
It was everyone around me
mm-hmm.
that was essentially warped, perverted, twisted. And that is the kind of environment that we're talking about. And this is the environment in which this kind of Satanism thrives, because what and by the way, the correct term for it is not Satanism, because Colonel Aquino separated from the Church of Satan. First Church of Satan under Anton Zandor LaVey was a kind of hedonistic humanism. And also, Anton Zandor LaVey was very much an atheist. He was very antithetical to churches taking advantage of the tax-exempt status in the United States. So he proudly paid taxes. Every member of the Church of Satan pays taxes, and that's a big deal with them. But Colonel Michael Aquino wanted a full church recognition so he could have a tax-exempt status. And that's ultimately why he organized, one of the many reasons he organized, the Temple of Set. So when he organized the Temple of Set, it was recognized as a Luciferian church. So Luciferianism is different from the Satanism.
Oh, okay.
And so, and it's tax exempt, officially recognized as a church. Now, when he was retired, as I said, many men are consulted in their retirement. He was contracted to write the chaplain's handbook for the United States Army. And people can look this up. I've actually posted it on my Facebook more than a few times. And people can go to my Facebook and scroll down if they do Facebook and find that chaplain's handbook. But it's out there on the internet anyway. But bear in mind the absurdity or the meaning of this. The United States Army didn't approach a rabbi. They didn't approach a priest. They didn't approach some religious representative from some Protestant church. Instead, they approached a Satanist and had a Satanist write the chaplain's handbook for the United States Army, with long sections on magic, with a K,
mm-hmm.
and, of course, Satanism, and how to respect Satanists, and how it was basically so the rest of the churches, Jewish or Christian or Catholic or otherwise, would make sure that they didn't interfere or disrespect the Satanists among them. That is basically what the U.S. Army Chaplain's Manual is all about. And so this is the insanity of which we speak. You have, in essence, a satanic military. That runs the that occupies a good deal of the world. If there has ever been, as so many Christian fundamentalists fear, a one-world empire of the Antichrist, it is this.
Well, that's a really interesting point, Douglas. We're going to carry on and talk more about this in the next segment. We're going to round things up here in a little bit. This is very interesting. You have so much material to share, Douglas, of course. And but before we take a little break, though, let's talk a little bit about your website and where people can go to find out more about your work, your past, your research that you've done on the DOD. You, of course, do talks. And I believe as well, Douglas, that you have a couple of upcoming books in the works. So why don't you share with us that and where people can go to find out more about this?
Yes, thank you so much for asking that. Please go to www.douglasdietrich.com, and I'm going to spell that out for you. Douglas is spelled with one S. And Dietrich, just think of the German-American actress Marlene Dietrich. And if you're too young to remember her, just put the words diet and rich together. And so DouglasDietrich.com, DIETRICH would be how Dietrich is spelled with a CH at the end. So DouglasDietrich.com, and we're discontinuing our DVD package. As soon as all of these currently remaining DVD sets are gone, they'll never be reissued again. The one DVD, Roswell and the Rising Sun, which led directly to my mother's death when I formally and personally came out, not anonymously like I had back in 1995, came out about the subject of the Roswell files. Basically, I came home after we delivered that presentation to find my mother dying in very suspicious circumstances. That's a whole different story in and of itself. But we're going to try and analog that into printed text format. And it definitely was already the subject of what I spoke about at UFOCon 2012, our UFOCon, here in Santa Clara in the greater San Francisco Bay Area just recently, just a few days ago. And the other DVD, Satan's Crusaders, was something that it was a presentation that I delivered, which is the content of that DVD, complete with photographs I took of human sacrifices that were conducted on site at the Presidio Military Base. They are in there. And I managed to do that because I majored in the same criminology course at San Francisco City College that the founder of the Church of Satan, Anton Zandor LaVey, majored in. Anton Zandor LaVey entered college to avoid the Korean War era draft in the United States. He majored in criminology. I was taught criminal photography by the same instructors who instructed him. And he ultimately became a criminal photographer for the San Francisco Police Department and a person who was advising them on occult crimes. I definitely want to go into that, so bring that up, please, when we come back from the break. It's so important because it was his photographic techniques that I used to get photographs that otherwise would never be available to the public of these human sacrifices, the remains of them, not while they were ongoing. I wasn't present for the sacrifices themselves. Obviously, okay. I would have done something.
Yeah.
But the aftermath. But in terms of the contents of that DVD, I did various presentations on it and will be doing so again at the Super Soldier Summit number 2, which will be probably held in Las Vegas and probably around March of the year 2013. So towards this end, we're just offering both of these DVDs for the price of one until depletion of supply, so access them through DouglasDietrich.com. Also, in terms of the secret history of the Second World War, please consult Nexus Magazine, and Nexus Magazine conducted an 8-hour Skype interview with myself through Thomas Kirschner, the editor of Nexus Magazine for United Germany. And we were able to get that into transcript form into 8-page segments. So I'm going to be in there for at least 4 issues. So since it's a bi-monthly periodical, we're talking 8 months out of the year at least I will be in Nexus Magazine. 2 of those issues have already come out. One of them is going into print and circulation within hours. And so literally all you need to do is go to nexusmagazine.com. Once again, that's www.nexusmagazine.com. Nexus is spelled N-E-X-U-S. I'm sure you're all very familiar with it. You can even download the articles of mine alone for $1.50 each. I don't make any money out of this whatsoever. I'm just trying to inform the rest of the world of what's going on with the American Empire and what happens within the American Empire. And so I'm doing this with Nexus Magazine just so that I can be internationally recognized for what it is that I'm trying to expose. Keep in mind, and I'm sure you're aware of this, Henrik, that Nexus Magazine is not allowed to circulate in the United States. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I thought they had an American branch there, didn't they?
They did, and it was shut down.
When was it shut down?
It was shut down years ago. It had to be at least 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay, I did not know that. All right.
Yeah, it's not allowed to circulate in the United States. Duncan Rhodes, the editor out of Australia, of course, Nexus Magazine is well-read within Europe and the Commonwealth of British Nations.
Sure.
And English-speaking publications are all sourcing out of Australia, where Duncan Rhodes, the editor, lives. And he's doing his best to try and get reestablished in the United States. But he's had major challenges. The United States does not – this is not a free country. I want to make this known to everybody, and people have to get used to this idea because we've grown up in a very ideologically tainted world. The 20th century was a century of ideological warfare, just as the centuries before it were centuries of religious warfare, we are returning very quickly to a new dark age of religious warfare. But in the interim, the so-called modern age, we're entering a postmodern age of religious warfare, but the modern age was a age of ideological warfare. And democracy is functionally has turned out to be a totalitarian ideology just as repressive as any of the other totalitarian ideologies it was competing with, such as communism and fascism. And that's how it operates in the United States. The United States can be, for a person like myself, a dangerous place to live. I lost my mother as a result of coming out with what I did, and I've lost other loved ones as well. I mean, the only reason I can speak as freely as I do, and I'll tell you this, Hendrik, straight out, is every single one of the relatives that I know or love is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something you have to keep in mind about any so-called whistleblower. If you look at these people, and if they're married and they have a family, they can't be for real. It's that simple.
Okay.
I mean, anyone you're interviewing, whether it's, for instance, at the UFO con, I came under attack by Richard Dolan. Now, there goes an individual who has a family, he's got kids, he's not saying anything real. And the DVD of that confrontation will be sold by the man who organized, along with my executrix, UFOCon, Brian William Hall. He's co-producers with my executrix, Lorian Fenton. The both of them made an agreement with everybody who attended that the speaker's panel would be recorded. And the speaker's panel was recorded, so this will be available for thousands of people to see anyway. So I might as well tell my side of the story before it gets tainted by the government, which Dolan works for. Basically, they had two shills in the audience, and they stood up on camera, of course, and one of them said, while we're all there on the speaker's panel, they asked a question, "Mr. Dolan, what do you think of Mr. Dietrich's work?" He instantly began a personal attack on me, you know, introduced it the way they always do. "Oh, don't take this personally, Douglas. This is nothing personal. I like you personally." That means he's going to attack you personally. At any rate, started this whole regurgitation of the government propaganda about World War II and all this historical fiction. He just started regurgitating this pablum. And I responded to him, and I informed him, "Look, you walked out of my lecture. You walked out of my presentation. You don't even know what I said. You admitted at the banquet where you sat on the same table with me the night before, you had never checked into any of my work or any of my research." And he had nothing to say other than, "Oh, well, I had another interview to conduct. I had to walk out." And then he wound up, you know, just barking like a dog. He just, at the end of it, was just saying, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa." You could see it on camera. I said, "Yeah, wow." And, that was that. Then the next guy, later on, you'll see on camera, stands up and says, "Mr. Dolan, do you think that they could have sent some young, charismatic, highly educated, intelligent, articulate individual to mislead us all?" And based on the shill before him, obviously, and who he's questioning, he's alluding to myself. But thankfully, Sean David Morton, the man who was acting as master of ceremonies for that panel, said, "Yeah, that would be me," and just shot that question down. But this is kind of what we deal with, and the entire way that the government speaks to each other, their signals to each other, having worked with the government for many years in police work, I graduated from the San Francisco Police Academy. I still have the graduation certificate. Never served as a peace officer for very long because I went deaf in my right ear. But with this kind of thing going down, one of the first things you notice when you're working with police work, private security enforcement, which was my second career, mercenary work, which was part of that second career of private contracting. Well, the first thing you notice is that if you see men show up anywhere in the United States or anywhere where you see American activity, and it looks like you can shoot them and bury them in the same suit, they're federal. They're government. Most other people in the United States can't afford a suit. I mean, this sounds strange, but if you're working in business these days in the United States, very few people wear suits. If you notice that in America, there's less and less people in suits. Very few people can afford the tailoring. Very few people can afford the clothing. That's how bad it is in America economically. People really don't get it in the rest of the world how bad it is here, especially in Eastern Europe. They think the streets are paved with gold here. They watch these old movies from the 50s. The reality is most Americans live in their cars. Most Americans can barely eke out enough to feed themselves, let alone their families. When somebody shows up in a suit, he's government. And there's Richard Dolan showing up everywhere in a suit. This is what we're talking about, this kind of activity. And the UFO community is the most infiltrated of all of these subcultures. And you have to ask yourself, why? I mean, most people who are interested in the UFO phenomena don't vote. Most of them are nearly homeless. The majority of them are just interested in the subject with an obsession, and they're more neurotic and unemployable than anything else as a rule. Many of them are experiencers, and they're rendered unemployable and neurotic by their experience. So you have to ask yourself, why is, you know, I was at the conference and there was a father of four children. He had his four children with him. He was walking in front of me, and I was entering the meeting room, and I heard him talking to his children right in front of me. Hey, there goes the UFO people. Put on your tinfoil hats. Ah, and all the kids are all laughing. I felt like asking him to attend my lecture, and maybe he would change his mind, but there's no point in embarrassing a father in front of his children. But this goes to show you what the American public thinks of people who investigate UFOs. They're that impotent in terms of a community. Everybody dismisses them. So why are they so heavily infiltrated by the government? And people who have investigated this, such as the man who was the author of the book Mirror Men, have indisputably proven the U.S. government invests an enormous amount in infiltrating the UFO community. I'll tell you why. Because of me. What they were afraid of was that ultimately someone like myself, the perfect storm in terms of information exposure, would come about through that community, because that's the only community that I could come out through. Because eventually, the perfect storm wrapped in a human body, someone who had all the motivations and nothing to lose, who used to work for the government, would really come out of that community and expose what was going on.
Well, I have not heard anything about the UFO work that you've talked about, Douglas, before, so maybe we can go into that a little bit more in the second hour as we begin to approach our break here in a little bit. Once again here, then, I want to give out the website, and we're going to carry on talking about this and much more, of course. DouglasDietrich.com, we're going to have that linked up on RedIceCreations.com as well, so you can click through easily to find out more about Douglas and some of the things he has available for you. But all right, we have much more to talk about. Thanks for the first hour, Douglas. Stay with us. We're going to continue in just a few minutes. We'll be right back. In the second hour, Douglas tells us more about the documents he was able to read. He'll talk about medical experimentation on military bases and satanic crimes. He speaks more about Colonel Michael Aquino and the 1st Earth Battalion. He shares stories of his personal accounts of Satanism. And later we talk about how far along the military is in the area of paranormal research. You want to hear more? Check out RedIceMembers.com. From there you can stream and download the entire program, acquire a membership, and you can comment, subscribe to the RSS feeds, and of course find related programs. Next up on Red Ice Radio we have Paul Hellier on UFOs, the energy crisis, and his thoughts on the economy. After this, Barbara Oakley, Marty Leeds, Katie Diolis, Mark Gaffney, and Rick Simpson. All right, we'll be back with more in the second hour with Douglas shortly.